Willkommen zu Winning Talks, dem Podcast für mentale Stärke im Reitsport, im Business und im Leben. Ich bin Constanze Wiesner, Mentalcoach, Business Coach und Springreiterin. Hier erwarten dich inspirierende Gäste, spannende Geschichten aus dem echten Leben und Mentaltools, die dich richtig weiterbringen. Schön, dass du hier bist und viel Freude beim Hören. The episode today is in English because I'm joined by a very special guest, Hanna Åkerblom, a Swedish professional show jumping rider living in Barcelona and competing internationally up to 160. She has ridden Nations Cups for Sweden multiple times and, well, her bold, determined riding style makes her absolutely unique. And yes, she's rather small, while her horses are often very big, which gives her an unmistakable presence in the arena. Today, in our episode, we're diving into what mental strength looks like at top level, how Hanna prepares for big classes, how she combines focus, courage, and consistency, and what drives her both in show jumping and ultra running, which we talk about later. I'm really excited for this conversation, Hanna. A warm welcome. So nice to have you here in my podcast. Good evening.
Hi, good evening. Thank you very much for having me. It's very nice to join you.
That's so cool. And where are we catching you today? In Barcelona, in Sweden, somewhere else? Where are you tonight?
Right now I'm at home in Barcelona, but we're going to the last competition of the year on Tuesday. So just the last preparations to go.
Ah, really cool. Where are you going on Tuesday? To which competition?
We're going to go to Olivanova for 2 weeks to ride the Met competition, the Mediterranean Equestrian Tour.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, good luck for you. Hanna, what does a typical day look like for you with training, horses and everything in between?
Sometimes it's a little bit hectic to get all my physical training in as well, not only the horses. But I normally start the mornings in the stable. I ride my horses. It depends. At the moment, I only have 5 horses in training. So it depends a little bit of each one, what they need to do, how much time I'm spending there. Normally in the afternoons, either I have some lessons, some classes with students, or I go home and I go to the gym or I go running. It depends a little bit where I am in my running training as well.
Yeah, sounds interesting. And many things you do in just one day. Impressive.
Yes, yes.
You live in Barcelona, as we heard. And how did that decision come about? And what has it changed in your life? And by the way, I love Barcelona. I could spend 2 months working there. It's a long time ago and it's such a nice city. So how does it come?
Well, that story is quite long and it's not that easy, but it started with that my husband died. So I didn't want to stay in Sweden. So I started to go to Spain for competitions. And then I felt quite good down here. I was looking around for a place to stay. I became a member of Real Club de Polo of Barcelona. And that's why I ended up in Barcelona. And yes, I've been here 10 years now, so a long time. And yeah, of course, when you're coming from the north of Sweden, you start living in Spain. I mean, everything changes. Like, nothing is the same if you compare the two countries. They're completely day and night.
Yeah, sure. What would you say is the most difference between the two countries? The weather or something else?
Well, of course, the weather is the biggest thing that you notice first of all. Of course, the winters down here is really easy comparison to the north of Europe, of course. But otherwise, I would say it's the culture. The cultural difference here with how the people are compared to the north, it's very different.
Yeah, I can imagine, as I also lived in Barcelona and Oviedo for 5 months in north of Spain. It's different. Sweden, I don't know. So what would you say are the Swedish people like?
Well, I think the Swedish people are quite similar to the Germans. No, we are a little bit more punctual. We're a little bit more strict in one way, a little bit more square. No, the Spanish people there are more laid back. They don't really care about much what is going on, good and bad, obviously. But yeah, sometimes you miss a little bit of the discipline from the north, like how the people are and how they take care of things. Like, I think Scandinavian or the North Europe people are a little bit more, good with taking care of the things and to do, administration work a bit better, because to be honest, that is a mess down here.
Yeah, a sad reason, but then changing all of your life and moving forward to Barcelona and now for 10 years. Well, from a sad reason coming, but into a really nice country. So thank you for sharing that with us, Hannah.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah. With regard to your show jumping career, let's switch to that. What are you most proud of in your show jumping career so far? What was your coolest moment?
Well, what I'm mostly proud of is that I'm actually doing it, in general, I never buy horses, which is already done. I always bring them up myself, and my best horse, Shodek, I bought him when he was 6 years old and no one believed in him. And I spent 10 years with his horse. I would say, like, my proudest moment with this horse is when we first, the first time jumped 160 and we were double clear and third. So that's like, the thing that I value the most. But in general, I'm really proud that, I am doing it. I'm doing it on my own and don't have much support around from trainers or people in general. So, and that is sometimes quite mentally hard if we're talking about mental training here.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, riding in these big classes and then doing it all by yourself is a thing. And then in a foreign country, or maybe it's your country.
Yes.
Now. So yeah, well, really, really cool. And I already made the joke in the introduction. I said you're quite small. Sorry for that.
Yes, no worries.
And you have often very big horses. Your Stodek and your young horse is also really, really large. What do you laugh about that combination, you being smaller and your horses being so big?
I always make a joke like I need to compensate, no? Like I am very tiny myself, so I need big things, like big horses, big cars or big lorries or something. No, but it's quite funny because when I first started riding, never been on a horse before, and I always were going for the biggest horses in the stable. Like, I was there 10 years old, started riding, and I saw the biggest horse in the stable. I said, I want to ride on that one. And they were, all the teachers were looking at me like, this tiny little girl is like, where is this horse going to take you? You can't ride that horse. And I said, yes, I can. And I never gave up. And I got on these horses because I was so stubborn. So in the end, they allowed me to ride them, and I did. And it went good sometimes not, let's say, in the beginning. But I'm still there now. It's like I really like big horses. They make me feel more comfortable, more secure, and with more confidence, I would say.
Sounds interesting what your reasons are, and that it comes from your childhood or somewhere when you said, well, give me the horses.
Yeah, it's quite funny when you think about it. But yes, I remember my first holiday break when you went to riding school, summer camps and stuff. I wanted to ride this really, really big horse and I couldn't ride at all. And she didn't want to let me on, but in the end she said, okay, ride it. And I fell off in the canter because the horse just flew away with me, basically. And I just fly off. And she was like, okay, now you're going to ride a pony. And I started crying because I was like, no, I want to ride a big one. She said, but you're falling off it. I said, I don't care. I just want to ride a big one. So it's very funny. I don't know why.
I mean, you're really successful with your big horses. So never change a winning system or never change a winning team.
No, exactly.
As we said, you compete up to 160 and you have ridden multiple Nations Cups for Sweden. And let us have a little look behind your mind. What goes through your mind the last minute when you ride into the arena for such a big class?
Actually, nothing at all. Like, I'm really calm, you know, and I don't really think about anything when I go into the arena. Just before, or like, I have my little, you know, yeah, my ritual or whatever, you know, like when I walk the course, I'm thinking, you know, how I'm gonna ride horse. I don't think about it anymore. Then I warm up the horse, I go through it again, and then I do like the last jump and whatever, and then I go and, you know, prepare myself to go in. And actually, once I go in, I don't think anymore. It's like, I can sometimes, if it's a very important class, I can, you know, say to the horse or to us together or something like, let's do it, or let's go, or something like that. But otherwise, it's like, no, I'm completely blank.
Sounds very, very good. Like a tunnel, maybe, or absolutely focused.
Yeah, could be, because it's, yeah. I don't really know what I'm thinking about, but...
Yeah, and funny that you sometimes say a sentence to you and your horse. When I'm in the course, I always say, it's showtime, Kentucky, and then let's go. Do you think your horse understands when you say, let's go, now it's our point, our turn?
I think Shodek does, because we do know each other so well. And of course, he can feel, you know, the tension, or he knows when it's the real deal and when it's just like a normal round, you know, of course, because we've been together for 10 years. So we have a great partnership, and I'm 100% sure that he understands when it's important. And normally he do perform a little bit better when me as well. Obviously, it's a team, but yeah, I notice.
That sounds really cool, like a real team.
Yes.
And you already talked a little bit about rituals, routines. Could you give us a little bit more details what your routines and rituals are when you prepare for, let's say, a big class?
Yes, like I said, it depends a little bit of where you start. If you're in the beginning or towards the end, obviously it's always better to be later in the start list, because it gives you a little bit more time to prepare. But like I said, normally I walk the course. Depends a little bit if it's like a Grand Prix or a Nations Cup or something important, how many times I walk it. And also how much time I have, because sometimes if you're in the beginning, you don't have so much time. But I walk the course, then I try to stay a little bit quiet for a couple of minutes, think about it, you know, go through in my head what I need to do. Sometimes if I need to go to the bathroom or something, I normally, yeah, I go to the toilet, and then I take my phone, and then I just disconnect a little bit. I start doing something else, either check some Facebook or Instagram, or I play some games on the phone, just to disconnect a little bit, to take like the edge of or the stress away. And then I get on, maybe I watch a couple of riders just to see a little bit the lines, how they are ridden or not. And then I start warming up, and then, like I said, I don't think about the course anymore. I just focus on the horse. I focus on how he feels like, how is he jumping, what does he need, what do I need, how do I feel like, do I need something? Try to have a good connection with the person who is helping you in the warm-up. I think that's very, very, very important, so it doesn't get any miscommunication or stress, because as soon as your stress level raises, then it's not so good. You need to have your time and to be able to focus and prepare properly. And then once I warmed up, I normally walk around a bit, let the horse go down in the pulse a little bit, which is also important, so they are not having too high pulse all the time. And then maybe I watch a couple of riders, or at least I go through the course again in my head, and I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to do? So I remember, okay, I need to ride 6 rides there, 5 there, blah, blah, blah. And then I take the last jump, or we go to the boot check or something, and then I go to the gate, and then I go in and I do my thing.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. And you do it the same thing on every competition, or would you say you vary a little bit, or is it always the same?
It's always the same, although sometimes when it's like the Nations Cup and things, and you have a little bit more pressure, or you know, the chief equip is there and stuff like that, maybe they put a little bit more pressure on you, or they want you to do something a little bit different, which I don't think is ideal, because in the end you need to do like you always do. So I do try to stick with my plan regardless of who is around or which class I am jumping. But of course I never really get nervous, but of course the stress level can go up a little bit, especially when you know that, okay, many people are watching, they want you to perform well, this is a very important class or something like that. And then it's very important just to take a few deep breaths and, you know, clap your horse a little bit and make sure that, you know, you are calm, so you don't put your stress on top of the horse, which is very easy because they notice everything. And of course, if you are more stressed, the horses get more nervous, and then it's easier to, you know, make a mistake or something. So yes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the horses are our mirrors.
Yes, they are.
Was there a moment, Hannah, in your career when mental strength made the big difference for you, when you really needed to be mentally strong?
Yes, I would say, you know, especially when I lost my husband, that was a very, very, very difficult, you know, mentally situation. And I started using like the competitions as my drug, basically, because it was the only time where I could only focus on something else. So, and that's what made me go through it. But, it, you know, once I came out, it made me a lot mentally stronger, you know. So it's a little bit difficult to explain, but it had a huge impact on me today, obviously, you know, to have to go through this, you know, mentally, and to be mentally strong every day, every time, every round, you know, because, yeah, things changes you, you know, so, or trauma changes you. I don't know if I explain myself good, but I hope.
I'm sure everyone can follow your explanations, and well, it's a big move what you did. So, and also big move, just changing the topic now, Hannah, ultra running. Can you explain that, what you're doing?
Yes.
What you're doing ultra running?
Well, if we talk about mental strength, that is only mental strength to do these things. And yes, it's a little bit crazy, because if someone told me 10 years ago that in 10 years you will be running 100 kilometers, I would say, no way, that's a joke, I will never run, you know. So it's actually really funny that I'm doing it now.
So the ultra runnings are 100 kilometers.
Yes.
Wow. How long does it take to run 100 kilometers?
Well, it depends a little bit, you know, because every race is different and the elevation is, you know, what takes time. So if it's flat, I mean, it's never easier, okay, but it's easier. Like I did one 93 kilometers and I did it in 12 hours, which was a little bit longer than I wanted, but I got injured halfway through and stuff like that. So, but that was with only 1,000 of elevation. And then I did another one just recently of 55 kilometers with 2,500 plus elevation. And that took, 9 hours. So it's, yes, it's, it depends a lot about, you know, everything, how long time it takes, about the terrain, the weather, if it's raining or not, and the elevation, because the elevation is hard. And I'm not, you know, I'm not an ultra runner. I'm a question rider. So I'm doing this as a hobby, kind of. Yeah, I'm not a professional in any way. If there's any ultra runners listening to this, probably they think I'm really slow. But what I like with this is that it is more mental. You know, it's literally just mental, everything, and it doesn't really matter, you know, how long time it takes. It's just the race, you know, like you finish. That's the important, you know, you reach the finish line. But it's different. It's very different, I must say.
Yeah, and I mean, the professional ultra runners, they don't jump 160 in the course. So I'm sure they are quite impressed. And
no.
Runners often talk about the man with the hammer. I know him by myself while running triathlons and so on. That moment when everything suddenly gets hard while running. Have you ever met the man with the hammer? And if yes, how do you talk to him?
Yeah, well, I mean, you do hallucinate quite a bit after a while, especially when it gets dark and you are tired and it's raining or it's cold, you know. And yes, of course, there is. In my last race now, I had a few moments where I was like, I mean, it's never ending. It was taking so much time and it went so slow, and you're checking the GPS all the time, and it's like, I mean, the kilometers, you know, they don't go. It's like, I'm going to finish tomorrow, you know, it feels like that. I do have a silly thing, but I'm pretty sure that everybody knows Finding Nemo and this lovely fish, Doris, you know. And when I feel like I want to give up, I don't want to take one more step, I'm always start singing, you know, in her song. It's like, keep on swimming, keep on swimming. So that's what I do. It's like, okay, one more step, one more step, one more step. Just keep doing that until you finish. So that's what, you know, saying it's really a mental game. And yeah, but it's funny. In one way, in a weird way, obviously, because people are going to think I'm crazy and I get to hear that all the time, but it's a challenge.
What a funny story that you sing the song from Doris and Nemo. I like that. That's lovely.
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes it's, you know, stuff for life is just hard. And the only way, you know, to go through it is to keep walking. It doesn't matter if, I mean, I also climb mountains, and that is one way even harder, because when it's so steep and it's snow and your legs are burning, well, also in the running, it's the same as burning. But it's, you know, you need to have something in your head that keeps you going. And you can do that with everything. It's also with the horses, even though it's not the same enduro sport. But in the end, it's kind of similar, because not every day is perfect. And sometimes you have this really difficult horse, or you don't, you know, you're struggling with something and you need to work through it. It's a very good thing. Just take, okay, with horses, it's not step by step, but it's maybe day by day. With mountain climbing or ultra running or triathlon or whatever, it's just like, okay, one more step, you know, whatever you do, don't stop. I think it's the most important thing, like never stop, never give up. In yeah. the running or in triathlon and whatever, you have a DNF thing, which is like, did not finish. But I have seen in some places where they put this and they says, do not fail. It's not did not finish, because that doesn't exist. It's like, you do not fail. And this I always think about all the time. It's like, okay, whatever happens, don't fail. You do not fail. Keep going.
Yeah, and if you describe it, it's more a question of how you see things and how you interpret them. Then what does it feel like, Hannah, to finish an ultra running or an ultra run? When you finish the line and you've done it, you went beyond your limits, how does that feel?
It's actually... Yeah, I normally say it's the same feeling as when you are jumping a clear round in a Grand Prix. It's the same feeling. You get this adrenaline, you get this euphoria, like you get so happy and you get relief that it's over, because, I mean, to do this, you suffer. There is no way of sugarcoating it in any way. It's like it's pure suffer. So once you cross the finish line, it's just like, yeah, you get this adrenaline rush and you just feel like so happy, you know, and you made it. Like, nothing is impossible. Everything is possible.
Yeah, everything is possible is a nice saying and so meaningful. I come back to this Doris and Nemo song, which you're singing while running. Do you have a similar song while riding? I'm interested, Hannah.
No, not quite. But I do sing a lot, or at least in my head. That's true. But now I don't remember if I have anything specific for when I'm riding. But sometimes I just get this, you know, song into my head and I just keep singing it and stuff like that. Also, what I do a lot when I'm competing, especially if I compete a bit younger horses that doesn't have so much experience, maybe not so much when I'm jumping a Grand Prix, but when I'm riding younger horses or unexperienced horses, I do speak a lot with them all the time. It's like, okay, this is good. You need to turn. Come on, pick up your feet. Or, you know, it's a small thing. This comes from when I was young and I was competing pony, because we got told we should speak with the horses. You know, they teach us that in where I'm from, at least. I don't know if it's everywhere in Sweden, but in my generation, we got told this, you know, to always to speak with the horses, speak with the ponies, and just kept with me all the time.
Cool. As the listeners know from the first episode, I always close up with four questions. And the first of the last four questions, Hannah, what mental tips would you like to share with our listeners?
Number one, during my ultra race, told me when I was so, so, so tired, she told me, when you think that you have nothing left, you have 50% left. And that helped me, and that has helped me in everything, in so much. It's like, when you think that I don't have anything left, I can't go one more step, I can't ride one more horse, I can't do one more show or whatever, you still have 50% left. So that means that you can do the double, or at least just as much as you have done already.
Yeah, sounds like a combination of motivation and discipline and belief in yourself.
Yes.
The next question. If you could choose a key to open a door that has been closed for you until now, which door would you like to open?
I would really like to ride the Global Champions Tour. That would be amazing. And I think it would also be very good, you know, experience-wise, career-wise, and everything. So I would really like to open that door if I could.
Okay, cool. Please complete the sentence. What I used to believe and what I know today.
It's very different. It's like, I used to believe so many things were not possible. But with all the things that I do know today, I believe that, or I know that everything is possible.
There's this sentence again, everything is possible.
Yes.
The last question is always a question, what would you like to ask myself or ask me?
When are we going to do an Ironman together? Or where?
Oh, Hannah. Well, my first and ever Ironman was in 2013. And I was on the list in 2014 and I didn't do it because I did it once. And maybe I have to learn your sentence. When you think you can't go anymore, there are 50% left. So
yeah,
I take an invitation.
That's good. That's good. Because that is one of my next goals to do. So I'm going to do an Ironman. I don't know exactly when, but I have started a little bit of the training to do. So that is in the future.
Yeah, sounds brilliant. At least if I can't compete, I will.
Let's hope so. I do have one more thing to add, and about mental strength, or about how my brain works. And it's like, or why I'm doing these crazy things, you know? And it's that I believe that everything that I have never done can be done, or I can do. So, and that's why I sometimes just threw myself into races or things, which is unreachable for so many people, but it's like, why can't I do it? It's just to do it, you know? And I also, my whole life, I've been doing things like learning by doing. That's a little bit how I work.
Yeah, sounds interesting on the one hand side, and on the other hand side, cool how you well know yourself and how you know how to guide yourself to do these sports and be so successful in that.
Yes, and if I had time, I would do so many more things. I am also training a little bit, or I want to do some HYROX competitions. So right now I'm also training for that. Just to see where the limits are, you know? Where are the limits?
Someone said, the sky is the limit, but I don't believe that.
No, probably it's more. Hopefully it's more.
Hannah, thank you so much for this really inspiring talk and your story and the tips for our listeners. And it was a pleasure to have you in my podcast, really. Thank you so much for being here.
No, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. I could be talking all night about, you know, mental strength and things that I have done and things that I want to do. So, anytime.
Really cool. Thank you very much.
No worries. Thank you.